Welcome to Strictly Business, Variety's weekly podcast featuring conversations with industry leaders about the business of media and entertainment. I'm Cynthia Littleton, co-editor-in-chief of Variety. Today my guest is Blake Chandley, VP of Global Business Solutions and head of ad sales for TikTok. TikTok has been at the center of the storm around social media. The platform has enjoyed meteoric growth over the past year. Its Chinese parent company, ByteDance, has also been drawn into the geopolitical tensions between the U.S. and China. But the drama hasn't dampened the interest of marketers in using the platform and its many tools that are designed, in Chandley's words, to inspire creativity and spark joy. In the conversation up next, the former Facebook executive offers insights into TikTok's rise and how the user base and audience has changed during the pandemic. Welcome back to Strictly Business.
I'm really excited to hear from Blake, who is TikTok's VP of Global Business Solutions and head of ad sales for one of the most dynamic media platforms that has come along in the last few years, a time when we have seen no shortage of new platforms arriving. But TikTok has made quite an impact in a short time, and we're fortunate to have Blake to talk to us about the service and its evolution. Thank you so much for joining us, Blake.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Cynthia.
Well, you are coming on just about your one-year anniversary with TikTok, a company that has been much in the news and has made a big impact on pop culture. Can you tell us about, you know, what there were so many extraordinary circumstances of 2020 and circumstances and conditions that certainly made a lot of, you know, made for ripe conditions for people looking for new kinds of short form content and new avenues for creativity, which is one of the things that TikTok really has inspired. Can you talk us through sort of what were some of the accelerants that made 2020 such a huge growth year for TikTok?
Yeah, of course. Well, one, it's almost 2 years now, funny enough, and time flies. I've been with the company. And 2020 was an interesting year by any measure, as you can imagine. From our perspective, what started out as what we thought would be an amazing growth year quickly shifted as COVID came in and people started working from home. And then we had Black Lives Matter, and there were a number of things that happened through the year. But if you look at overall, I think one of the things that really surprised us, and looking back, it probably shouldn't have come as any surprise, given the platform is, you know, a content platform, it's an entertainment platform, is the universal appreciation, universal kind of adoption of the platform across all generations. And our mission is to inspire creativity and bring joy. And I think we did that throughout the year, in a year where a lot of people really appreciated and needed some of that on a daily basis. But what really struck me was, you know, there was a shift as we saw the year go on, in two areas. One was around content, right? So the diversity in content and the kinds of creators that were creating content on the platform, you know, went from, you know, a pretty simple offering to diversity around cooking and DIY and education. And we had these amazing creators just telling inspiring stories all year long. And that just continued, which then led to the adoption of the platform for a variety of audiences. And so diversification of our audience base went from a relatively younger audience, i.e. Gen Z, to an audience that spans multi-generations. And I think it's all based around storytelling. And I was thinking the other day, as we all kind of have our own thoughts going into a new year, that I remember days when we used to sit around television as a family and watch TV, right? And that was, you know, right, going back a ways, and it was linear TV, and that's just what we did, right? On a Sunday night or a Wednesday night or whatever, we'd have our favorite TV show. And we'd all sit around as family. And we just don't do that anymore. Screens have, you know, really fragmented that experience. And so, you know, my kids have their screens, and we have all, my wife and I have our screens. And most of the time they don't connect, right? What we saw a lot of this year, and then looking back, it is a phenomenon, yeah, was this connection of generations, right? And so people were creating TikToks, and younger generations were introducing their parents and grandparents to the platform. And so there was this unity again around the family, around this content that just didn't exist before. And so I kind of feel like there's this interesting movement that's taking place around, you know, connecting that family again, which, you know, we feel really strongly is part of our mission to really, you know, to really inspire creativity and bring joy across all different people.
It's a different form of family-friendly entertainment on TikTok, for sure, much of it. What was it that, and I'm sure that diversification of audience must have been music to your ears, being, you know, in charge of selling advertising on the platform. What was it, though, that in your experience, what was it that drove the initial adoption? What was the...
I think that brought people to the platform. Yeah, it's a great question. I think that a lot of people, you know, associate us with being a social platform, right? And there's this automatic, you know, direct association with some other players in the space, of which we're all intimately familiar. I mean, I think the big difference is we're not. Like, we're an interest-based, we're a content platform. And so the ability for people to find content that's relevant and interesting to them is really what, you know, really what the For You feed does. And that's very, very different than the experience people are going to find anywhere else, where it's reliant on a connection to friends and family and so on and so forth. And, you know, this is really, in my view, the next generation of television, right? And it's short form. It's easy to digest. It doesn't require a huge commitment in terms of time, although people do find themselves, you know, once they start kind of getting sucked into the TikTok, like, you know, vortex and spending a lot of time. But it's easily digestible, it's interesting, and it's all designed specifically for you based on your interests. And that's how the For You feed really has generated a lot of positivity.
Mm-hmm. Of course, TikTok has been in the headlines, you know, again, coming off of a pretty incredible year for culture, for politics, certainly for public health. You know, TikTok and the parent company ByteDance have been in the headlines. There's been a lot of strife at the political level in the U.S. about the Chinese ownership of ByteDance and how that, you know, may or may not be figuring into larger kind of geopolitical and business considerations. I realize that all of that is going on, you know, at a step above the area that you oversee. But can you talk about how that the impact of the political drama and the uncertainty about whether the company had to be sold to continue to operate in the U.S. or how did that impact your growth? Obviously, TikTok is growing apace, but did that impede growth at all? And was that a difficult conversation for you with the marketers that you are selling the service to?
Yeah, it's an appropriate question, and it's something that's, you know, it's not something I'll spend a lot of time go too deep in, because we're, you know, still currently in discussions, you know, with the government and the regulatory body about, you know, about some of that. But listen, we've been pretty clear that, one, there's been a lot of media coverage on it, right? And you couldn't escape it. It's dropped off a little bit given some of the current you know, media considerations. But one, we've been pretty clear that we just disagree with some of the fundamental premises that the government put forward. In terms of security of data, access of data, you know, TikTok does not exist in China. Our data doesn't sit in China. It sits, U.S. data sits in the U.S. With some redundancy in Singapore. So, like, you know, we're very comfortable with the precautions and the things that we've done as a company. But we've disagreed with the government on that one in many cases, but we continue to work with them. Like, we have ongoing, almost daily dialogue with the government around how do we resolve this? Because at the end of the day, we want to protect our users, and we want to, you know, that's a huge commitment we have, is protecting our user base. And it's our number one priority as a company. And so anything we do to empower our audience, our 100 million plus users in the US, protect them, empower them. It's really, we feel an obligation to protect them in that sense. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that comes with it, you know, a lot of different discussions we need to have and to get people comfortable with that. But we're in ongoing negotiations, discussions with the objective of having an outcome that's positive for our users.
Do you have a sense that the administration change, the incoming Biden administration, might have a different view?
I can't really speak to that right now. I know there's a lot of discussions taking place, as you can imagine. There's a lot of you know, dialogue across the aisle everywhere. But right now, I think I'll just let that be, and we'll see where things fall over the next few weeks.
Was it at all, the sort of Washington drama, has it been a damper at all for marketers? I mean, it seems like the TikTok story for the TikTok itself has been nothing but growth. And I'm guessing that that's that is what people want to hear at a time when it's, you know, it's reaching audiences is harder than ever.
Yeah, we've been really, really surprised with the support. I mean, the community, the advertising community in general, whether it be advertisers, agencies, have really supported us through this whole process. And we've had, obviously, discussions and dialogue around it. But the universal support received has been really, really positive. We spend a lot more of our time talking around brand safety and community safety and what we're doing, you know, not only as an individual company, but as an industry to protect users than we have around some of the political dynamics that are taking place. And so the vast majority of our time is spent talking around those subject matters.
Mm-hmm. You do a lot of, obviously, a lot of creative things with marketers and sponsorship. How can you talk in general about kind of how a typical marketing deal with TikTok works? Is it CPM based? Is it time based? How do you subsidize it?
If you start the highest level, it's a fundamental change, right? And we're being a little bit, I think we'll be a little bit disruptive in that sense. You know, digital marketing has gotten very much around programmatic, and it's, you know, it's very tech driven. We've lost the art of storytelling. And I think that's something that we identified very early on that brands want more of. And given the, you know, this inspirational environment and the storytelling that takes place every day with our users and our community in general, what brands want to do is find a voice in that, right? And so the conversations we have with brands, first and foremost, is around what does their voice look like in an environment around authenticity, right? How do they storytell? How are they, quote, less than perfect? Because at the end of the day, you know, the concept of going and creating $1 million, you know, mini film and then put it onto all these different platforms, it doesn't resonate as well on the platform. People want to see authenticity. You know, they want brands to come in and be involved. They want brands to invite them to be involved. And so the conversation first and foremost is around creativity and the role that brands play on the platform. And the roles the brands play a really, really important role. We do not want brands to be perceived as kind of advertising, meaning I have to watch it in order to have access to this free content. We want users to look at the branded content and say, wow, that was cool. I want to watch it again, right? And so we see that kind of passion. When brands do it right, and there are a number of brands that have, all year long, we saw amazing executions from brands that really inspired people and drew them in and asked people to participate. And so that's first and foremost the conversations we have with brands. And then the next question is, how do we amplify that? And how do we, you know, kind of invest behind that to make sure we get the right reach and frequency and the right KPIs on measurement that they need in order to continue to invest with us?
But would you say that marketers come to you, are they generally looking kind of in the age and demographic based buying, or are they looking for, we want to be in your anything that involves cooking or anything that involves skateboarding or something, like by topic and more, or is it a mix of both?
It's a mix of both. Like, you have people that, you know, certainly there are certain audiences the brands are targeting based on, you know, their brand, right? And so there's typically some demographic considerations as well as contextual. And so we work with brands on both those fronts.
We'll take a quick break before hearing more from Blake Chanley about TikTok ad campaigns that moved the needle this year. Welcome back to Strictly Business. Here's more with TikTok ad sales chief Blake Chanley.
Can you give us a for instance of an execution or two that you think really harnessed the capabilities that TikTok brings, the unique capabilities of TikTok?
I think there are two that come up, and I look at it almost in 2 seconds. They're the big brands, the ones we all know, these national brands that are amazing marketers. And then we have our smaller SMB community, which is actually doing some really inspirational stuff as well. There was one campaign by Under Armour that was done this over the kind of the holiday period, which was, you know, show up and show off, which we had, they retained a number of our creators. And that's another core premise. We work with brands large, connecting with the creators, or some people call them influencers, but you know, to help them tell their story and bring their story to life on the platform. And so they retained a number of their athletes to come in and do some interesting things with some music in the background, that were great, right? Whether it be basketball related or whatever it might be. And then they basically put that out there to our community and said, you know, show up and show off. And it was around skills, around different things. And then they allowed the community to take that and to make it their own, right? And so it could have been in the basketball space. It could have been someone either on a basketball court doing something amazing with a trick shot or a dunk or whatever it might be. Or there was some creative with someone in a supermarket grabbing, you know, paper towels off the top shelf, given all their shelves were empty. And that was their version of showing off, right? And so, yeah, we generated, I think there were 1.4 billion pieces of creative, or 1.4 million pieces of creative that were developed by our user base in conjunction with the campaign, and had 8 billion views. I mean, that was one that was great. But another one, which I thought was really amazing, it goes to storytelling, was Cheerios. And I don't know if you saw this, but you know, Cheerios had an amazing commercial back in the 90s, which was a grandmother with a baby with Cheerios on the top. And then, you know, normally you'd be feeding Cheerios to the baby. And this time the grandmother was Christmas time saying, here's where you live. And the baby wants the Cheerios and she holds it up and the baby's like, I'm going to eat it. And then she puts it down. She goes, here's where your Uncle John lives. Here's where I live. And unfortunately we all can't be together, but I'm glad that I'm here with you. And she puts two Cheerios together. And it was just a very emotional, you know, and you know, General Mills and Cheerios, you know, no family and Christmas and holidays.
Nothing. Sure.
And so that was done years and years ago as a television campaign. Well, there was a creator on the platform that basically came up with an idea that said, you know, General Mills, please, please, please recreate this today, but use Zoom and use like, and literally the brand, she tagged General Mills in, and literally the brand brought it back to life. And they did an incarnation of 2020, right? Which had the same grandmother and the same child, you know, baby, which was now grown up, and they're connecting on Zoom, and they had the whole behind the scenes thing, but it was very much still this emotional connection for the brand to the holiday season. And so, like, again, that storytelling can't take place anywhere else. It has to take place in a place like this. And it's just one of those kind of tearjerker moments. You go, okay, that was just an amazing piece of content. Forget the fact that it was brought to us by a brand. So those are two good ones. And then on small business, there's an amazing campaign that was done through the holiday and the shopping season by a small business called Two Blind Brothers. And it got some national coverage, but there are these two blind brothers, Bradford and Bryant, who have this concept, you know, called Shop Blind. And what they essentially did was a challenge, just said to people in their whole lives, they've had to rely on others to shop for them or read menus or whatever it might be. And they started campaigns to shop blind, meaning come to our website, you know, basically give us a price point and we're going to send you something. You don't know what it is, right? And all 100% of proceeds were going towards, you know, retinal research to help cure certain forms of blindness that a lot of people are affected by. And the idea of going and just saying, you know, basically saying, here's my price point, and then stepping back was kind of scary, but like tens and tens and tens of thousands of people went and shopped blind. Right. And it became kind of a universal viral, had a viral component to it, which was a good for you moment, which of course, you know, giving to, you know, any kind of non-for-profit is, but also a brand and a product and shopping and e-commerce, and it all tied it together in a really kind of magical way. So like, those are the kind of things that we love seeing on the platform.
Mm-hmm. And it would, for, you know, the more you grow, the more opportunities you have. And as you say, these are fairly unique opportunities, particularly for marketers. The downside, of course, of user-generated content and having an open platform like that is that, you know, content moderation has become a huge issue for all social media platforms, large and small. With your mission to spark creativity and create bursts of joy, which goodness knows we need more than ever now, how are you watching the skies to make sure that bad actors don't get into your platform and put things on that, you know, are decidedly less than joyful?
Yeah, it's the number one thing we think about, as you can imagine, especially in days like what led up to this conversation. It's an industry thing. As an industry, it's an opportunity for us to do better. And we can call it issues, but it's a challenge. And like most, we use a combination of, you know, community guidelines, which are very strict around hate and speech and misinformation and everything else. as well as technology, so machine learning to identify that as content gets loaded into the platform, using machine learning to quickly identify and train the machines to look for content that falls into a certain pattern or behavior that's synonymous with some of these behaviors we don't want, and pulling that content before it ever reaches the graph. And according to our last transparency report, we pulled down 100 million pieces of content, of which 96% were before it ever even hit the graph. And the rest was somewhat reactionary. And then we use human moderation, which is as people reporting content that's inappropriate or they think should be considered, we use the combination of machine learning and human moderators to make sure that we're identifying that behavior, that content, and pulling it down very, very quickly. And then obviously, on the back end, making sure that those folks that are doing that, are pulled from the platform and so on.
With 100 million pieces of content, that's a lot to keep up with. Machine learning can do so much. Have you found that that given the nature of TikTok, the nature of stuff that is objectionable, is it political? Is it more violent? Is there a thread to what you're finding that is objectionable on TikTok? Is it attract a certain kind of objectionable type of content versus maybe you would see on a broader social platform?
Yeah, I think some of the other platforms have different issues. Like I think the social platforms where people are connected via social kind of like their social behaviors, they have a very different challenge than we do. When people are coming to the platform to create, inspire creativity and bring joy, the expectation when people come into it is just that. So they're not looking for that kind of content. Whereas in some of the other platforms, I think it's expected at this point. And so that's where the voices are loudest. We have some activism. Like when Black Lives Matter came up, there were people that were discussing that subject, but they were doing it in a really inspirational way. It wasn't in a derogatory or cruel way. It was done more of an inspirational way. And so we want people to express themselves. But when it turns to hate or turns to misinformation or whatever it might be, we need to make sure that our community is protected. So we work really diligently on that.
Have you had some tough calls when the human beings get involved? Have you had tough calls about what is the line between what's okay and not okay?
So the trust and safety team falls under different remits. So I'd be remiss if I were to try and step in and go too deep on the subject. I think that everybody, today's world's changing so fast. And people that are trying to express themselves in a negative way will continue to try and find ways to do that. And you need to be able to react accordingly. And so, certainly there are probably moments where there are tough decisions to make. I'm not at liberty to talk about those here, but certainly we'll continue to evolve our platform and iterate our platform and our policies to protect our community best we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. And that I can imagine that there's no more urgent and tougher job in the company than keeping an eye on all of that, especially because you have the reputation for being very, open and friendly to all demographics. I know, Blake, you spent a long time at Facebook before joining TikTok. What did you learn in your time in the formative years of Facebook and watching its evolution? What did you learn from Facebook that you are applying at TikTok now? And are you seeing any major differences in the growth trajectories of the platforms?
Yeah, I think the growth trajectories are very similar. And Facebook at the time, going back, I was there for a decade from 2007 to 17. If you kind of rewind back to 2009, 10, before Facebook became, the behemoth that it is today, social was new, right? The social graph didn't exist. It was this new concept that people were trying to embrace and understand, and both users, right, on the growth side from the user perspective, what role did it play in people's lives, as well as brands and certainly regulatory bodies and everybody else. We were all trying to make it up as we went. And so we were constantly iterating and we were creating product and we were moving quickly in response to different things that we saw in the market. And it's very, very similar to where we are today. And we're not a social graph, we're a content graph, an interest graph, which is new. It's very, very different. And it's had its own different opportunities and challenges and everything else. And so for us, it's really around a couple core things. One is, hiring amazing people. Like people ultimately help define what the future of the business will look like. And so we have great people on the product side, the ad side, marketing side, just have amazing individuals who have open minds or what we call learners. And we want to create a very learning culture. We want to be able to move very quickly. And change is hard. Like if you look at some of the big companies now, it's much more difficult for a Facebook or Google to shift, you know, bot businesses that are as big as they are, whereas we're still nimble enough that we can move very, very quickly if we see something that's working. And so we do a lot of testing, iteration. And so some of the core values I think we saw back in the day are similar in terms of moving fast and trying to build product that's relevant for our users and our brands. And then there are differences. Like I think that we've learned a lot from, you know, around data and consumer privacy and, you know, giving users control of the kind of advertising they see, which, you know, historically wasn't necessarily built into the business models that we think, you know, could be really differentiated going forward. So we're learning some things and we're gonna do things a little bit differently and we're gonna hopefully be a little bit disruptive in a very comfortable way. But I think the industry's asked us to be, and they said, don't just come back and come with a big audience with a programmatic capability. They really want us to come back and allow them to storytell again and to engage audiences in a different way that they simply haven't been able to do on the mobile device.
Mm-hmm. Blake, why don't you leave us with, why don't we end with, what are some of your most impressive growth stats from 2020 or growth stats for TikTok since it really started to take off in the U.S.?
Well, I mean, certainly our user base, you know, we're now exceeding 100 million users, which is up significantly from 2019. And we've seen that across the world. It's not really just the U.S. we're seeing it. The kind of content has just diversified in an amazing way, and the types of, you know, audiences that are on the platform have changed significantly. I won't get into the metrics around revenue and brands, but, you know, certainly the industry has supported us, and for that we're eternally grateful and humbled. We think that by working with the smartest people in the agency world and the client world, that we can build kind of a future that is different, where, you know, advertising becomes, you know, anticipated and hoped for versus something people deal with in order to get contact. And so, you know, those are things that we're really focused on right now.
Blake, thank you so much for taking the time to talk us through what's going on at this most dynamic media platform. We will definitely stay tuned.
Thanks for listening, and please leave us a review at Apple Podcasts. We love to hear from listeners. Be sure to tune in next week when my guests will be Andrew Kosov and Broderick Johnson, the producers and financiers who run Alcon Entertainment.